The North Dakota State Legislature will have less money to spend than originally thought in the next session. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? The University of Minnesota is under investigation by the Trump administration. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And here at the Fargo Dome, the Fargo North boys basketball coach is back on the sidelines at the state tournament, suspended yesterday, but back on the floor today. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? On all of these things, my friend, it sure seems like the question will be heavily debated. Good afternoon. Good to be here with you today for the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Friday, March 14th. When we get together again on Monday, we will officially have reached the halfway point of March. I am here at the Fargo Dome today because over on WDAY Radio later tonight, I'll be calling a basketball game between Davies High School and West Fargo. Should be a really good state semifinal here tonight. And if you want to listen to that, that'll be over on WDAY Radio about 6:30 or so. The Mark Levin Show comes your way right after I am done at 6 o'clock here on the flag. Lots to do on the show today. And as I tell you, every day I go to work trying to figure out what in the world happened during this crazy day while I was working, doing my A job. And this is kind of my, my thesis, my report, my recommendations for your consideration, however you want to look at it. But always glad to be here on the program and making sure that we get you all the information you need to make sense of this crazy world that we live in. No doubt about that. The Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line is open for business, 701-271-1100. Make an appointment today and get in next week. So it won't take you very long to get in there and be seen by somebody, Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness. The Steve Hallstrom Studio is brought to you by the good folks of Precision Concrete Cutters in Ramjack North. They want to remind you that your home is your greatest asset. Find out more about how to protect it at pccnd.com. As you can tell, we're going to have a little background ambiance here today from the basketball tournament, but we've got, don't be fooled by the environment here. We've got a whole bunch of very interesting stories that have nothing to do with sports, except for one of them, and I hinted at that off the top of the program today. This is a huge story that is going around Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo, about the Fargo North boys basketball coach. Just a little teaser on this one. He was suspended yesterday while they did an investigation. We found out today that he had been reinstated after the investigation was done, but he missed the opportunity to coach his team yesterday. So not only did he miss an opportunity, his team missed their chance to have their coach on the bench. And we found out a little bit more about the allegations today that were levied against him and a little bit about the investigation that cleared him. And this has a lot of people talking. I got a couple of calls on this today from people I know in the community who are saying, Steve, what in the world is going on here? And I said, I'm trying to figure out the same thing. And we don't know all the details yet, and this is my number one comment on any story where it seems like there's a lot we don't know. It's easy to try to come up with your answer, your position, your opinion, and in some cases go after other people. I still don't know that we know enough in this case about what exactly happened. So I'll give you some thoughts on that coming up here before the show is done today. All right, let's get to the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire to catch you up on what has been a very busy and eventful day. We start with the almanac. And holy smokes, is it nice out right now. Oh, my word. You just cannot hope for better weather than what we've had here this afternoon. Some thermometers reaching 70. 67 is the most accurate high temperature that I have been able to find. And that, as of right now, is not a record. If we get above 68, we will set a new record. We might tie it, perhaps, today, but 68, the record high set back in 2015. Right now, 67 degrees is the reading that I am getting. Average high for this day is only 35, so we are well above average today. It just feels great. Feels like spring is definitely not just coming, but here. Average low is 13, record low minus 28 back in 1897. Let me see if I can get you a current wind speed, because that's one piece that's really going to be changing here as the next few hours go on. We're going to drop the temperatures, but first we're going to kick in the wind. Right now, winds out of the southeast at 13 miles an hour, so just a nice breeze right now. But boy, you go the hour by hour looking at some of the forecasts out there, and I heard Dean talking about this morning too, that it's really going to fall off a cliff here. between 8 and 10 o'clock, we'll go from about 50 down to 38. And by the time we wake up tomorrow, we'll be in the low 20s. And that snow and that wind is still coming in. So more details on that here in just a few minutes. All right, sunrise this morning was at 7:41. Sunset will be at 7:31. Today we'll gain 3 minutes and 22 seconds of daylight today. In the markets, it was a positive day on Wall Street, but even so, the market posted its worst week since 2023. The Dow was up 674 points, S&P 500 up 117, the NASDAQ up 451. So there were some big gains, and nobody can really put their finger on exactly what happened today, why people were buying. More on that in a minute. We can also tell you that WTI crude oil today, basically unchanged at $67 a barrel. Gold today, basically unchanged as well. Same thing with silver. Gold at $2,993 an ounce. It did briefly touch $3,000 per ounce on gold. Silver today only up about a penny, $34.36. And Bitcoin today, about $3,500 at $84,042. We may be seeing a low, a floor, you might want to call it, being put in on Bitcoin. We've bounced a couple of times off about 80,000, and each time it's hit that, it's bounced back, and the coins have traded hands. So there's been some momentum and some volume that has kicked in at 80,000. So we'll see. We'll probably retest that somewhere along the way, so we'll see what happens there. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.08. That's up a penny from yesterday. North Dakota's at $2.99, Minnesota $2.98, South Dakota $2.96. So gas prices not all that divergent across our region. All right, let's get into some of the news stories that are making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. The Associated Press has a write-up on the big storm system. It's not just coming through our part of the world, but it is a massive system crossing most of the United States. They could get tornadoes down in the Mississippi Valley. We're going to get a blizzard, likely, it looks like, here tomorrow. Dry, gusty, windy conditions, Texas and Oklahoma, that pose an extreme risk of wildfires. They are expecting winds at 80 to 85 miles an hour. Those are the gusts. Those aren't straight-line winds, but are down as you go further south. Doesn't look like we'll get there. But I heard Dean say we could be easily in the 50s for wind gusts. Holy smokes. Everybody's getting a little something out of this storm system. WDAY Radio reports that Fargo Public Schools is explaining its suspension of middle school teacher and Fargo North boys basketball coach Travis Hogue. Yesterday, the district announced they were placing Hogue on administrative leave pending the outcome of an administrative investigation. The district said at that time they could not comment further. The allegation, as it turned out, that we learned today after the district reinstated Hogue and allowed him to coach the team here today at the Fargo Dome, the allegation was of an explicit sexual image. This image was being circulated on social media. The social media post further indicated that this was Hogue that is shown in this picture, and that the image was sent to male and female students. The district added today that due to the nature of the allegations and in accordance with district policy, Hogue was placed on paid administrative leave pending the outcome of an investigation. She said she went on further, Anne-Marie Campbell went on further to say the leave was taken to maintain the integrity of our learning environment and ensure adherence to professional conduct standards. We do know that the district is aware of who posted these images of the person who supposedly was the teacher and coach that we're talking about here. And they have tried to get further discussion with this individual, but this individual has not responded. I have more comments on this coming up in the 5 o'clock hour today. And my emotions have really run the gamut on this story, so more conversation on that. If you have an opinion on this one, we certainly are glad to hear from you today at 701-271-1100. Also in the news today, Bismarck Tribune reports that North Dakota lawmakers have been presented with a new revenue forecast for North Dakota that paints a less rosy picture than the one adopted just a month ago. Today, the Office of Management and Budget made its presentation to senators and representatives. And they presented two forecasts that saw a slight increase in general fund revenues for the next biennium, but down from what January indicated. January, they said they should have about $177 million more than they did this biennium. But now that number has been brought down by $105 million, so they will have about $72 million more than the current biennium that they are in. The state currently is 12.7% above forecast general fund revenues for the 2023 to 2025 biennium to date. The new forecast predicts that the state will bring in $30 million less in 2026 and about $60 million less in 2027 in sales and use tax revenue than was forecast in January. Sales and use tax revenue is the largest source of funding for the state's general fund. So they're expecting economic activity, it looks like, in the state of North Dakota to slow from what they thought a month ago. Might this be some of the trade things that we're seeing out of the Trump administration? Not sure. But the people doing the projections say the state will have less money to spend. The Star Tribune reports that the University of Minnesota is one of 50 universities under federal investigation for alleged racial discrimination in scholarship and graduate programs. Minnesota's public university is already one of five schools that are part of a Trump investigation for alleged anti-Semitism. The Department of Education's newest investigation comes after a memo last month that reminded institutions to end the use of racial preferences and stereotypes in admissions, scholarship programs, or other educational programming, or they could lose federal money. Also in the news today, WDAY Radio reports that a report from the Minnesota Department of Health shows 39% of Minnesota public schools tested positive for radon, an odorless gas linked to more than 21,000 lung cancer deaths in the United States each year. It occurs naturally in Minnesota soils and enters buildings through cracks or openings in walls or foundations. Also in the news today, folks at CNBC report that the reason that we are seeing a bounce in stocks today is an easing of concerns around escalating tensions for the time being. They say investors might also be scooping up shares after a stock market pullback yesterday. To me, this just feels like people are saying the selling is getting a little bit too overcooked right now, because when the reason that the markets go up big is concerns seem to be easing around escalating tensions for the time being, that tells you there wasn't really anything in particular that got the market's attention. It was maybe just time to get back in and buy a little bit. I told you yesterday on the program that I believe the markets are nervous, but they're not scared. And this is why, one of the big reasons why, we continue to see these pockets of resilience in the stock market. It was a good day today. Dow up 674, S&P 500 was up 2 percentage points, and the NASDAQ was up 2.6 percentage points. So good day in the markets today, and nobody can tell you exactly why. Reuters reports that United States consumers are starting to crack as tariffs are adding to inflation and recession concerns. So this is a story generally about the travel sector. And the CNBC people, this is what you get now. You go around media and there's a story every day, maybe 10 of them, about why Americans are scared about the Trump tariffs. They don't ever want you to forget that you should be scared about the Trump tariffs. But air travel sector, especially large international airlines, had been a bright spot following the pandemic. But this week, CEOs of the four largest U.S. airlines, United, American, Delta, and Southwest, said they are seeing a slowdown in demand this quarter. And so they're expecting fewer people to hop on the plane. I don't know if that'll bring down airline ticket prices, but all four of those biggies, the big four of U.S. airlines, say they are seeing a slowdown in people flying this quarter. I mentioned to you that I'm at the Fargo Dome today, and going on in front of me right now is our second semifinal of the girls' AA tournament. Earlier today, West Fargo Horace beat Mandan 73-48. Kind of looks like it's going to be Horace's tournament to lose, but you never know. The game going on in front of me is Bismarck Century and Minot, where early second half, Bismarck Century has a 35-30 lead over Minot High. And that is a look, friends, at some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. It's kind of a digest of everything that's been going on today. When we come back, the Day in Doge. Canceled federal contracts. Yes, they are the gifts that keep on giving. How much were we going to spend to examine the stress of deportations among Latin youth in our country? Well, we know what we were going to spend, and I guess now we know probably what we're going to save and we're not going to spend now. We'll talk about that as we return on the Steve Alsom Show. It is time for your daily dose of Doge, which I will get to in just a minute. First emailer Hannah said, Steve, when does that Fargo North basketball team play again? Yeah, I'm glad you asked. They actually played this afternoon in a consolation game, and they beat Grand Forks Red River 84-81. So the team came out, made a statement today. That was a bit of an upset. Fargo North was the fourth-seeded team out of the East. Grand Forks Red River lost in the EDC championship game, so they were the number two seed in the East. So a bit of an upset there. So Fargo North stays alive. They get to play one more day, and they'll take on Bismarck tomorrow at 11:30 here at the Fargo Dome in the Constellation Championship. I am at the Fargo Dome today because I'm going to be calling basketball on our sister station, WDAY Radio, later tonight. 6:30, we've got Davies against West Fargo boys semifinal action. That should be a good one. And there's one more game after that. Bismarck Century and Mandan will be playing coming up later today. If you are interested in what happened earlier here today in the girls' tournament, it was Shanley and Davies. Actually, they are just about to get started, so they have not yet played. So, but in the championship bracket, Horace beat Mandan 73-48. So Horace into the championship game tomorrow night against the winner of the game going on right now. I am right in front of the Minot student section, and they're pretty excited right now. Their team is tied. So a good game going on here. All right, let's talk about the day in Doge. Yesterday I told you that the National Institute of Health canceled a number of grants, and altogether they said 239 different wasteful contracts with a total ceiling value of $1.7 billion and immediate savings of $400 million. And I gave you a couple of the high points. Is that the right word? High points or low points of the things that they found. Well, more detail coming out today now from that NIH analysis there. They have cut, I've got four contracts here that I think you'll enjoy. $100,000 had been earmarked for Vanderbilt University to study social networks among sexual and gender minorities. There were $37,000 that was committed to the University of Houston to study the fear of deportation in Latino young men and women. $681,000 for the University of Pennsylvania to study social media anti-vaping messages among sexual and gender minority teens. Yes, because, of course, we have to know not just how this affects teens, but how these messages affect people who are a little confused on where they stand on the gender spectrum there. And then there was $225,000 that was earmarked for the University of Colorado to study the effects of hormones on headaches in transmasculine adolescents. So I guess in order for you to understand that story, you have to first know what a transmasculine... Honestly, the language, it changes day to day. And so many of the words that we read now, I don't know. I don't recognize these words, and someone has to explain to me. I still struggle to know if a trans girl is really a female biologically who's decided that she wants to be a boy or if it's vice versa. So it's sort of a moving target there. But we keep bringing you these stories about the Department of Governmental Efficiency. You can decide what you think of them. But I, for one, am so glad that we're looking into these things. And so far what we've seen is kind of the worst of the worst. I just think there's a lot of needless stuff that we don't need. I'm glad we're looking at some of those things, like how many cell phones do we have here? How many credit cards are here? How many subscriptions do we have to different things? Do we need them all? Not everything is sinister, but it all can go away because we're a country that's $36 trillion in debt. Although I'll have to tell you that I like to check the usdebtclock.org every so often. A regular dose of interesting information. about what's happening with the debt levels in our country. And recently I've noticed that the pace at which the debt clock has gone up has slowed down quite a bit. For a while it was, you know, adding, and the pace was just climbing up and up and up. And we've been kind of stuck on $36.3 trillion now for a while, so I think that's a good thing. Speaking of good things, here comes Austin Erickson. He's got a look at some of the stories that the newsroom has been following here today. Hi, Austin. How are
I don't
you?
Know if everything I say is good, but I'll take it. Thanks, Steve.
Well, it's good reporting, my man.
Oh, you know, okay, that's the way you meant it. Okay,
exactly. It's good professional work done by you and your colleagues. So, but yeah, not everything is happy in nature. You're right about that.
Right. Okay. Well, Steve is at the girls' state basketball tournament at the Fargo Dome, but at the Shack, there's news about Fargo North's high school's boys basketball coach and Ben Franklin middle school teacher Travis Hogue. He has been reinstated from administrative leave. Fargo Public Schools says it completed its investigation into the allegation an explicit image of Hogue was being circulated on social media. The post indicated Hogue was a teacher and coach and said he was sending the explicit image to male and female students. The district says Hogue didn't violate district policies. And, of course, Hogue was back on the Spartans bench, as Steve told you, for their state consolation semifinals win 83-81 against Grand Forks Red River this afternoon. Minnesota lawmakers are moving forward with a bill that would require local law enforcement to cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement. The House Public Safety Committee has advanced a measure that would force local law enforcement to inform ICE when an undocumented person is arrested on suspicion of committing a violent crime. The bill now goes to the Election, Finance, and Governmental Operations Committee. And an important note about the Minnesota House, Republicans right now have a one-seat majority, 67-66, but come Monday, David Gottfried, the DFLer who won that special election in the Roseville and Shoreview areas, will be seated. So we will have a tie in the Minnesota House, and the Minnesota Senate will stay at a one-seat DFL majority for DFLers. And a revised state revenue forecast for North Dakota supports significant investments in property tax relief and other priorities, despite a downward adjustment in oil tax revenue. The revised forecast projects the 2025-2027 biennium will bring in general fund revenues of about $5.1 billion. That's a reduction of $105 million, or 2%, from the January executive forecast used to prepare Governor Kelly Armstrong's budget recommendation to the legislature. Even with that change, the Armstrong executive budget would be projected to end the biennium with a positive $125 million ending fund balance. House Majority Leader Mike DeFore of Dickinson says there are challenges budgeting 2 years out.
There's a lot of uncertainty, what with tariffs and all kinds of things like that creates some uncertainty. So as we have done in the past, we've tended to forecast conservatively and also budget conservatively.
North Dakota is one of four legislatures in the country that have sessions, legislative sessions, every other year. Steve, that's a look at the news today.
Okay, thank you very much, Austin. Appreciate the updates as always, my friend. Have a great rest of the day and a great weekend. When we come back on the program, we've got a lot of ground yet to cover before we finish up here today, and we have a guest to introduce you to. He is the new District 27 State Representative out of Fargo. You'll get the chance to meet T.J. Brown here in just a couple minutes. But first, let's check in with meteorologist Dean Wysocki in the Skywatch Weather Center. We are all wondering what the next 24 hours are going to look like. Dino, take it away.
Steve, after a beautiful spring day today, can you believe it? Temperatures, record territory, and boy, oh boy, it felt like spring out there. It still does today, and we're going to continue with the mild weather for the next few hours. But as we head overnight, that's when we'll see some rain spreading in from the south, and could see a few embedded rumbles of thunder. Can't rule that out. Looks like we're going to dodge a bullet with this storm. What looked yesterday to be a major event is really starting to unfold to be a nuisance. I mean, we'll still have problems with this, I think, in the morning. And it's focusing mainly now into Lakes Country with the heavier snow. So as we head into the overnight hours, we'll see that rain spreading from the south. And we'll mix in a little bit of sleet and freezing rain with that overnight after about 2, 3 in the morning. And then that'll eventually change over to snow as we head into a Saturday morning. Now, one thing we won't escape with this storm are the winds. We will still have winds 30 to 50 miles an hour tomorrow, and temperatures only in the 20s tomorrow. So a good 45-degree drop almost. Unbelievable. And it looks like right around the FM area, we're looking at an inch or less of accumulation, it looks like now. But even if we see an inch with those 30 to 50 mile an hour winds, it's going to be messy in the morning. Now, if you have any travel going into Lakes Country, I would advise against it until evening as conditions are going to be a little rough. And if you're going south on 29, I'd hold off on that as well. So, but for the valley going westward, I think we're going to be okay. The worst part of this is going to be in the morning with improving conditions throughout the day. Then we'll mellow things out as we head into Sunday with highs in the low 30s. So all in all, it looks like we're going to dodge a bullet with this storm. What looked to be a heavy snowmaker now looks like to be an inch or less. Now, again, Lakes Country, we can still see 3 to 6 inches of snow. So I would advise against travel there on Saturday for the first half of the day.
Welcome back to the Fargo Dome. As you might be able to tell, we've got a basketball game going on here. I'll be calling basketball tonight over on our sister station, WDAY. The boys' state semifinals coming up tonight. But right now, we've got a girls' semifinal between Bismarck Century and Minot. Right now, Century leads 50-41 with about 6 minutes to go. So high drama here. The winner will take on Horace in the state championship game tomorrow. Well, we are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Timothy Brown Jr., also known as TJ Brown. And he is now a member of the legislative session that's going on in Bismarck. He came to the position after the untimely passing of Josh Christie, the Fargo State representative. And so District 27 in South Fargo members elected a new legislator to serve out the rest of the term. And that is T.J. Brown, and he's been kind enough to join us here on the program today. T.J., great to meet you. I feel like I've probably seen you somewhere along the line in maybe your duties, something else around town. You're a member of law enforcement. Maybe, hopefully I haven't seen you too often with that. But I feel like I've probably bumped into you somewhere along the line, but nice to have you on the program today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I just want to clarify, I used to be a member of law enforcement. I'm no longer a cop.
Oh, okay. Got it. Thank you for letting us know about that. The detail that I had seen indicated a member of law enforcement, so thanks for clarifying that. TJ, you've got a heck of a background. You sound like our kind of guy, a former Army medic, runs a virtual shooting range, and you've got a podcast and firearms training company called Tea Party Solutions. So we love it. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you came to be interested in community affairs and politics.
Yeah, so I grew up mostly in the Memphis, Tennessee area, right across state line in Mississippi. moved up here for the first time in 2012. It got really, really cold that year, so I decided to enlist in the Army, where I became an Army medic. I served as an Army medic at Walter Reed for about 4 years on the Wounded Warrior floor, just taking care of our wounded service members when they came back from overseas. After that, I was a police officer in Memphis, Tennessee. That's where I went to the police academy. I policed there for about 3.5 years. Moved up to the Fargo area to raise our family. I'm married with 3 kids. I policed in West Fargo for quite a while. I was the officer that had the heart attack on duty, so that's probably where you have seen my face has been. As far as getting involved in politics, I'm always looking for a way to do the most amount of good for our community, and I think that this is the area that I can do. I can serve that purpose and be the biggest factor of change for our area.
TJ, we are glad to have you serving in this particular area, and we need great representation. Certainly in the city of Fargo, we need good, solid conservatives that are in the Bismarck legislature. That said, obviously awkward situation to come in the way you did. How have you handled that, and how have you seen the other lawmakers try to sort of strike up the conversation, good to have you here, kind of, sort of? Just a little bit of a weird situation for everybody. How have you handled that, and how have others treated you?
So jumping in the middle of the session is definitely tough. I mean, it's a deep pool to try and swim in just off the start, but every single legislator there, no matter what side, what position they take, they've all been incredibly helpful in all aspects, and I definitely wouldn't have made it through this first week if it wasn't for the help of all the legislators out there.
So, TJ, what is it like trying to not just learn how to be out there and how to get around and how to do what you need to do, but also try to get up to speed on all the issues and all the bills. It's got to be a major crash course for you.
You know, I was never that good of a student in school. I was never necessarily the biggest reader, but I've been reading absolutely nonstop for the last week. I mean, soon as the session would get done, I'd go back to the hotel and I'd be reading till 10, 11 o'clock just to try to get caught up on bills that we still have, much less bills that we've already passed.
Yeah, so it's definitely a lot to take in, and kudos to you. I'm sure you've had some late nights and early mornings. Tell us a little bit about who you are politically. Are you more of a traditional Republican? Are you kind of more of a moderate? Are you would you call yourself a MAGA Republican? How would you describe yourself and what you stand for?
I call myself incredibly conservative. I think MAGA has a lot of negative connotations with it. I am incredibly conservative, God, family, country, absolutely pro-life, absolutely Second Amendment, small government, low taxes, and school choice.
And school choice, you said. Yeah, tell us a little bit about some of the bills that have immediately piqued your attention in some of those issues. What jumped out to you right away saying, wow, here's something that I can really sink my teeth in or take a strong position on? Tell us about a bill or two that you've really been focusing on.
So right now, at this current moment there, I wouldn't necessarily say there's any bills that I'm super hyper-focused on at the moment. I'm kind of trying to take it day by day to learn what bills I'm voting on that day. Unfortunately for me, a lot of the school choice bills and bigger bills that I'm interested in have already passed the House and are sitting on the Senate side, so I won't get much of a chance to vote on those.
Tell me a little bit about what the learning curve has been like just to understand the process and not having been in the legislature before. It seems like, you know, to a guy like yourself who's, you know, built a couple of businesses and you're kind of a can-do guy and let's get things going, let's make it happen. Well, there's a whole lot of procedural things and rules and process you got to follow to do that job out there. How frustrating has that been, or not so bad for you?
I would definitely say it's been frustrating, but not getting angry at it. It's just more trying to understand all the procedural aspects that go into it, because everything is procedural driven. But again, all the legislators have been incredibly helpful.
Yeah, TJ, I lost you there for a second, but I think I pulled out most of what I heard you say there. Tell me about when you got this job and when you were voted to go and take this spot for Josh Christie. Were there any bills or any sort of issues that you had a lot of people reaching out to you about saying, hey, when you go out there, we need you to stand up strong for us in this area or that area? Anything in particular?
Yeah, so the two biggest local issues that people are concerned about are going to be the school choice bills and the CO2 pipeline. Those are probably the two biggest things, and then property tax coming in at a close third.
Yeah, everybody's talking about property tax. Have you been able to get, I know there's probably three sort of, swings of the pinata that look like might advance in the property tax side of things there. They all have kind of something to do with the governor's plan about, kind of a modest increase of the property tax credit that is in place already. Have you been able to kind of get a sense for which of those bills you like on that particular issue and which ones really ring true for you?
I really haven't. My platform is taxation is theft, because ultimately that's what it is. However, we do have to acknowledge the fact that the government has to have money to provide basic services. And the unfortunate part of North Dakota is a lot of the rural areas that don't have a lot of businesses or industries in the area that could provide that income through sales and use taxes are kind of dependent on those property taxes to provide basic services. So honestly, as far as which one is absolute best, I'm not really sure at this moment.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about school choice. What do you want to have happen on that particular issue? What do you want to protect? What are you willing to put on the table and try to draw something new up about? Give us your kind of maybe your non-negotiables on school choice, if you have any that are strong in your mind.
So ultimately with school choice, I want people to be able to decide where their children go and be able to afford it. You know, I've had experience many times in life dropping my kids off in front of the public school and just having the overwhelming feeling of regret that I'm not able to do better for them. I would love to see the education savings account where the state is putting in money in that education savings account to help fund either private school tuition, homeschool supplies, or a homeschooling curriculum or something of that nature.
Yeah, very good. And when it comes to government spending, it's a lot's been talked about probably before you had gotten out there in a lot of media channels and stations like this one. But where people have said, we like this DOGE effort going on federally now, and we need some of that going on in the state of North Dakota as well, because while the bills are maybe well-intentioned and generally put together by conservative lawmakers, it does kind of turn into a snowball rolling downhill and the government getting bigger and the spending getting higher. Have you, from what you've seen out there so far in your first couple weeks out there, are you seeing areas where you feel like, wow, we've kind of got this wrong on spending? We got to be a little more eager to say no once in a while. Have you seen any of those areas?
So I will say, so far the legislature is being very cautious when it comes to spending, not knowing what's going to happen at the federal level. But also there are two bills right now, one's in front of the House, one's in front of the Senate, that are various versions of the DOGE effort that's going on federally, but at a North Dakota level to both make a smaller government, a more streamlined government, and to save the government a lot of money. So both of those are both very good bills that are in front of their respective chambers right now. I've been on several committees where we have shot down bills because of the expenditure attached to them. And so everybody is being very cautious with the amount of spending, because ultimately more spending equals a bigger government and more taxes.
Okay. Before I let you go, tell us about one bill that you're going to be watching coming up here real soon where you think people should really pay attention because you think that this bill means something.
There is a bill that will be on the floor of the House next week that is a single subject vote bill, saying that a bill can only adhere to one subject when it is being presented. The idea is great, but the bill has had poor execution and I believe could have the potential of being weaponized in the future, and that is something I would look out for.
Okay, very good. Well, TJ, we appreciate your time today on the program. I know it's the end of a busy week, and you probably have more things to do before the week is done. So great to meet you. Thank you for coming on the show, and thank you for standing up for all those faith, family, freedom things that you are at the legislature.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, and you enjoy your game.
Thank you very much. Will do. Yeah, it's kind of weird to be at a basketball game and you're doing a radio show about something that has nothing to do with the game when you're courtside with all the other play-by-play people. Yeah, we got some good drama going on here, but it looks like Century is going to come out on top and beat Minot tonight. 54-45 right now with 40 seconds to play. All right, short break for us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back live to the Fargo Dome, the North Dakota State Fair is going back to my high school days for its latest concert announcement. Who's playing the fair? We'll talk about that one coming up next. Well, we can add another name to the lineup for the North Dakota State Fair in Minot this summer. And you might be saying, Steve, why are you wasting our time talking about what's going on in Minot this summer? Well, a lot of people are from this part of the world. Not this part of the world, that part of the world. And like to go back. And there's a lot of people who are not from the Minot area who like to go up for the fair and check out the good times. Well, they have announced already about a half a dozen acts, but they announced a new one today. And this one takes me back a little bit. Limp Bizkit is going to be playing Friday, July 25th at 8 o'clock. They just announced it there. Limp Bizkit is sort of a... I don't even know what you call them. They were kind of one of those, sort of an offspring of like Nirvana and kind of those hard bands. Kind of Nirvana got it started. They weren't a hard band themselves, but then you got like Nine Inch Nails and Limp Bizkit and bands like that. So these guys can bang. There's no doubt about that. You might not want to take your mom to the show unless your mom likes the language. And you may not want to take the kiddos unless your kids are like 30 and they've heard it all before. But good tunes. There was a time in my life when I was digging the Limp Bizkit. Probably never my favorite band, but some pretty fun stuff. And the other bands that are playing the State Fair this year, the other like half dozen or so, is talking about Bailey Zimmerman. That's a country artist. He's kind of a new face, new name. Ian Munsick. Now, I wasn't familiar with Ian Munsick, but he is from Wyoming. He's kind of like a country rock, sort of a folk, kind of a country rock, kind of a rock folk guy. So a little bit of everything there, I guess. I can't tell you I know any of his tunes. Jelly Roll, I think we all know who Jelly Roll is. He's going to be there. Sawyer Brown, who a lot of us have heard as well. And then I suppose you'd say the headliner, Luke Bryan, has the final show on Saturday, July 26th at 8 o'clock. So Luke Bryan, always a good time. So some good acts that are booked and set for North Dakota State Fair. All right, well, we've got still a whole hour left to go of the show. I'm going to get into this Travis Hogue case a little bit. Suspended yesterday, and then they cleared him of any wrongdoing today. And the timing is just horrible. And I just want to kind of dig into this a little bit with you. And if you've got any thoughts or comments, certainly be glad to hear from you as well. We'll do all that and more. Top 5 at 5 on the way, coming up next on the Steve Alstrom Show. Welcome back to hour number 2 of the Steve Alstrom Show. Today coming to you live from the Fargo Dome, where the second girls semifinal in Class 2A has just ended. AA is the big school division here. And Bismarck Century has beaten Minot 57-54. Pretty much as expected, Century was the number one seed in the West. Minot had been the number one team, not just in the West, but the whole state. But one of their fine players who just committed to UND, Maggie Fricke, got injured late in the season. She's a very, very good player. And without her, they just didn't quite have enough to get by in the region tournament and then as well in the state tournament here today as well. So Century advances. It was a tough fight, though, 57-54. You could tell by the screaming going on behind me in hour number one of the show, there was a lot of intensity. Horace is a very, very good team. My guess is if you asked, you know, 100 basketball coaches around the state, they'd say Horace maybe beats Bismarck Century by 5 to 8 points, something like that. But you never know. That's why they play the game. So it should be a fun game coming up here. That's tomorrow at 6. And if you are so interested, we will have that game for you on WDAY radio coming up tomorrow, 6 o'clock, and the boys' championship game to follow that. So there you go on the basketball day. The reason I'm here tonight is I'm doing games on WDAY coming up later tonight at 6:30. I've got a game. So if you're interested, flip it over to WDAY to catch Davies and West Fargo. Should be a good one. They played a couple times already this year, maybe even a third time this year, and West Fargo's got them the last couple, so we'll see how this one goes here tonight. All right, it's time for the Top 5 at 5, the 5 most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These are stories that, in my mind, pass the so what test, things that really matter as far as economy, way of life, health, things like that. So here's what I have for you today in the Top 5 at 5. There is a new revenue forecast that predicts lower than expected earnings for the state of North Dakota in their sales and use tax. And a lot of this comes from oil and gas, but it's also all the other things we do here in the state. And last month, the forecast was that the state would have about $177 million worth of increase from where we are in this biennium. And that $177 million is what they would have to be able to spend in the next one in the 2025 to 2027 biennium. However, they got some different projections today. They do this every month where they kind of do some projections on what things are looking like, and things have changed quite a bit. The $72 million more than what they will have to work with this time around is down from $177 million more than what they have this time around that was announced a month ago. So that's a lot of money, about $105 million difference. So we'll see if that turns out to be true. Now, this is kind of like the stories or surveys about tariffs where people are kind of guessing as to what might happen coming up later on. This is a projection based on what we think is happening now that will not change. Like if it doesn't change going forward, well, we all know that things change a lot. It certainly happened that way in the last month. I've said this like probably 10 times on the show. If Trump removes the tariffs tomorrow, you're seeing completely different projections on just about everything in the country because people are baking in many cases, a worst-case scenario for a lot of those projections. So that's the story that I have for you on that, story number one. Story number two isn't as much of a news story as it is a social media post that really jumped out to me. President Trump says he had a, quote, very good and productive discussion with Vladimir Putin yesterday. And he says, quote, there's a very good chance the war will end. And Trump has requested this that Putin would spare Ukrainian lives. The post he made on Truth Social says we had a very good productive discussion with Vladimir Putin of Russia yesterday. There's a very good chance that this horrible bloody war can finally come to an end. And then Trump goes all caps. But at this very moment, thousands of Ukrainian troops are completely surrounded by the Russian military and in a very bad and vulnerable position. I have strongly requested of President Putin that their lives be spared. This would be a horrible massacre, one not seen since World War II. God bless them all. So, Trump's interpretation, and he doesn't mind saying it, is that there's a very good chance that the war will end. So that's good enough for me to call it story number two. Story number three, speaking of the Trump administration, they have put the University of Minnesota under federal investigation for alleged racial discrimination in scholarship and graduate programs. The U of M is one of 50 universities under federal investigation for this. And Minnesota's kind of already on the radar because Trump has got them eyeballed for alleged anti-Semitism. So they're kind of turning into a repeat offender here in this. The Star Tribune reports the Department of Education's newest investigation comes after a memo last month that reminded institutions to end the use of racial preferences and stereotypes in admissions, scholarship programs, or other educational programming, or risk losing federal money. This is the whole, kind of DEI stuff needs to go. Students need to be assessed according to their merit, accomplishment. No affirmative action here. And Linda McMahon, the Secretary of Education, while they still have a department, I guess, said that schools need to assess their students by merit and accomplishment, not be prejudged by the color of their skin, and we will not yield on this commitment. So that's story number three. Story number four, just interesting enough that I had to put it in here. Gold today, for the first time ever, reached a price of $3,000 an ounce. And Reuters has a write-up on this one today. They say gold pierced the psychological milestone of 3,000 an ounce today for the first time on a historic rally as trade tensions and U.S. rate cut bets supercharged its appeal as a safe haven asset. Bullion has scaled 13 all-time highs so far this year and is on track for a second straight week of gains. They say that the Trump tariffs have played a significant role in raising gold's demand. And the global trade war, they say, that has roiled financial markets and raised recession fears, is escalating. As we told you yesterday, kind of the latest part of that is Trump's threat to put a 200% tariff on European alcohol imports. So when people are a little nervous and they're looking for certainty, they go to things like gold. And it certainly seems that they are now because prices are at an all-time high. And finally, CNBC with this story, it was kind of buried. This is a paragraph 10 story. It's kind of buried deep into a article. They were talking about how customers or consumers across the country are skittish about the economy. And, of course, they always have to say, oh, the Trump tariffs, you know, have everybody scared. So I shrug off my irritation with this part of the story, and I just keep reading, because usually in these stories you find something you hadn't heard before that you think is notable, and I certainly did. The CEOs of the United States' four largest airlines, this would be Delta, Southwest, United, and American, all said this week they are seeing a slowdown in demand this quarter, so fewer people buying airline tickets. And American, Delta, and Southwest have cut their first quarter forecast. Interesting, because through all of the inflationary pressures that we saw in the Biden administration and all of the concern about, you know, are we going to default on this? Does the country have financial standing? What does our bond rating look like? What does our debt look like? People didn't stop traveling with all of that. And I would argue that the threat of what might possibly happen down the road with Trump tariffs is nowhere near as dire as what you saw in your buying power being exhausted. So I don't know if this is a story about people that are just paying attention to the headlines, or maybe this is them getting, finally their debt load is getting too much and it's catching up, because we know that default rates are up, credit card borrowing is up, defaults on a lot of different consumer loans are up. So maybe that's part of it. So we will probably never quite know, barring a well-done survey of some kind. But people, well, however we got here, people are flying less. And those, friends, are your most five most consequential stories today. We call them the top five of five, brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go to nancykellyrealty.com and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small-town living is still a thing. When we come back on the program, I want to talk about the story that everybody here at the state basketball tournament is talking about. Fargo North boys basketball coach suspended but put back on the bench today. What happened, and did it have to go down this way? We'll talk about it next. Welcome back to the Fargo Dome, site of the state Class AA Boys and Girls Basketball Championships. Two semifinals are in the books. We got two more tonight. The two girls games this afternoon taking place here. It was Century beating Minot 57-54 and Horace beating Mandan 73-48. So Horace and Century tomorrow in the championship match there. And on the boys' side, we've got two semifinals coming up tonight. I'll have the call at 6:30 on WDAY. West Fargo and Davies will be lacing them up. And then after that, Bismarck, Century, and Mandan. Earlier today, in consolation play, Fargo North beat Grand Forks Red River by a score of 84-81. And so now North will take on Bismarck in the consolation championship tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. here at the Dome. And that's where I want to go next. We learned yesterday, just a few hours before the start of this basketball tournament, that the boys basketball coach for Fargo North, Travis Hogue, had been suspended pending the results of an investigation. Our news team went to work, found that there was nothing that the police were looking at criminal in nature of any kind, and the district said, we cannot make any other comments. And so, of course, your mind starts racing. What in the world happened there? I know the gentleman we're speaking of, Travis Hogue. He is a friend of mine. I am proud to call him a friend of mine. I've known him for quite some time. He and I coached a little bit together back in the day. We had kids coming through youth basketball at the same time and got to know him doing games where he was head coach of the North Spartans. And I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, man, this must be bad. They wouldn't do this unless, like the day before the state basketball tournament, they wouldn't do this unless they had pretty good reason to believe that something nasty was happening. So that's all we really knew. Nobody was commenting much on, you know, the nature of the incident, apparently, or the situation. That's all we knew. Well, today we found out more. And it all started today. Again, a few hours before, North was supposed to play their game today at 2 o'clock here at the Fargo Dome. And we learned that he had been reinstated. Back on the bench you go. All sealed up and ready to go. And I remember thinking, I was driving back from Bismarck at the time, and I said to myself, what in the world is happening here? Like, they suspend him for the quarterfinal round. They not only take him off the bench for, you know, his own status, but they deprive their kids of having their coach on the bench. And that's obviously a very traumatic thing for young athletes. That's a big, big deal. Well, North got blown out. It was a tough game, and they probably would have struggled to come up with a win in any situation, but it was certainly big distraction, and they lost the game. Well, we found out then that the reason that he had been suspended was that the district was looking into an allegation of improper sexual conduct. Not necessarily that he committed anything, but he had been the subject of some images. I don't even want to say pictures. Images that had been floating around on the web and social media. I had a friend who saw these images and sent them to me last night, so I had a chance to see exactly what we're talking about here. And it is a social media post that he did not make. Somebody else made it, saying, can you believe this is the North boys basketball coach? He's sending these pictures to boys and girls in the school. And it's four different shots. One of them is full frontal nudity, which is disturbing. But I had to see what we were talking about. I can say this. The facial features of the image I saw look nothing like the guy I know. And then there were other different, just a picture of him that was fine, just smiling at a event somewhere, whatever. But the implication of this post was that, you know, he's misbehaving and he's sending all these pictures out. Well, we find out today that the district says it was not Travis himself who sent these images out. It was somebody else. And the district, we now know, tried to contact the person who made these images and sent them out and was unsuccessful. Now, at some point along the way, the district made the decision, or potentially North High School, we don't know yet that yet, but it's all going through the district office. They made the decision on Wednesday night, the day before the first game, that they knew enough to say that we've got to put a suspension in until we can get through this. And apparently they thought they couldn't get through it in time for the game to take place or for anybody to prepare for said game. Now, if you take a look at what's happened here, these are the kinds of things that make me ask a lot of questions. I want to know a whole lot of stuff here, because to me it seems at face value that something wasn't done right here. Something was done wrong, and that the North boys basketball team was wronged, and so was the coach. That's my initial reaction. However, two things I will say to you. And the first one is, we need to be patient. There are so many times, if the last 5 years has taught us anything, it is that you have to wait until you know everything before you make opinions, because how many times have we been fooled by something that seemed one way and was something else? The Jussie Smollett, the Covington Catholic kids, all the allegations of this thing or that thing happening. And then you find out later that, okay, there isn't any evidence. It's just hearsay. Okay, well, it would be good to know that before we make up our minds. So I am going to be patient. At the same time, I am frustrated and I'm upset about this, because a basketball coach who 2019 Teacher of the Year in Fargo Public Schools is going to have this around his neck the rest of his life. There's nowhere that he's going to be able to go in this community where people aren't going to say, oh, that's the guy, do you think he really did it, or what was that all about? Because the district took the step of suspending him. If they would have just said, we are aware of a situation, we are investigating it, but as of right now, we don't know that any wrongdoing was done, so why are we suspending him? Well, that to me seems like what I would have liked to have heard, but again, we don't know enough. So my first thing I'm going to say to you is, let's be patient until we know everything there is to know. More is coming out quickly, and we probably will find out more in the next couple of days or so. The second thing I want to say about this is, if the district has some kind of a policy in effect, I'll call it a trigger policy, where anytime there is an allegation of sexual impropriety or this kind of thing that comes to the administration that looks like it has any credibility whatsoever, like basically it's something, here's an image, and you say, okay, this is something. If they have a policy that says if anything like that happens, they immediately, in every case, suspend, pull the teacher out of the classroom, off the bench of basketball or sports, whatever, while we take a look at it, we do that with everybody, then that's one thing. Maybe they get all the teachers together at the start of the school year and say, just so you guys all know, if anything like this happens, whether you're innocent, guilty, whatever, we are going to suspend you, put you on leave, whatever. Just want you to know, if you don't like it, you don't have to work here, but this is what we're going to do in every situation. Well, then I can see what happened here makes some sense. However, if they do have any discretion at all in this matter of to say, okay, there's likely cause or reasonable reason to believe, reasonable cause, I guess you'd say, and they looked at this and said, yes, we think this is a reasonable cause, and then suspended him, they put themselves in the eye of the storm. Because they were not able to figure out, in this case, that it was what it turned out eventually to be, or at least what it seems like it is, and that is the coach is innocent of everything here. You're either guilty or you're innocent of things like this. And in this case, he's been ruled innocent. So, what do you do with that? Why? What is it that you saw that made you feel like it's worth it and it's worth risking his reputation and it's risking the experience of our student-athletes that we think there's enough here so we're going to do this? How do they adjudicate that so quickly? How did they know? Because if you didn't have anything that you think is reasonable cause here or reasonable grounds for suspicion, then you have to do what I talked about earlier and just say, hey, look, we're aware of allegations. We're looking into it. He's done nothing wrong as far as we know. He's innocent until proven guilty. But it seems like in this case he was guilty until proven innocent. And I don't know how you ever get your innocence back in this case. Again, I'll go back to the first thing I said. I'm going to wait, and I'm going to be patient. I'm not going to start ripping anybody right here. But I hope that what we find out is that policy is, no matter what it is, no matter how far-fetched it seems, we just do this, trigger, and they're out until we get this figured out, then I will understand it a lot more. If somebody looked at this and said, some anonymous person who was not him is sending these pictures or these images out, and some people have said it's AI created, I don't know. But if someone looked at this and said, yeah, you know what, I think there's something here, we better do something about this, or there's enough here, then, boy, you better be right. And in this case, they weren't. And they have opened themselves up to lawsuit. They have opened themselves up to all kinds of criticism. It would be a fascinating story if there weren't lives and reputations and careers hanging in the balance. And I wish the best for Coach Hogue. He coached his team to a win today. Would love it if he is able to help his team win their game tomorrow. And we will wait to see if additional details come out. We'll wait to see what the policy is from Fargo Public Schools. And we'll wait to see why they thought that there was enough here that they needed to take this step. Obviously, a very dramatic step on the eve of the state basketball tournament. So those are my thoughts on this one. 701-271-1100. We'll have a little time toward the end of the show if you want to weigh in on this as well. But when we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, Bill Glahn is a policy fellow with the Center of the American Experiment, and he has done some research about how much money is being wasted down in St. Paul at the Minnesota State Capitol, kind of the DOGE effort, if you will, of the St. Paul Minnesota Legislature. And we'll talk to Bill about that when we come back after this news and weather check on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Welcome back to the Fargo Dome. Yeah, at the Fargo Dome today doing the show. I'm at the State Class 2A Boys and Girls Basketball Championships. I'm going to be calling the game on WDAY radio tonight at 6:30. Fargo Davies taking on West Fargo in one semifinal. And then after that, there's going to be another game that promises to be very good here as well, Century taking on Mandan. And but we've got the game at 6:30 over on WDAY, West Fargo and Davies. So I'm here at the arena. We just finished the two afternoon semifinals for the girls. And a lot of drama, a lot of screaming young people, but it's what we love this time of year. Well, we always love stories about people who are looking into how to make government run more efficiently. And to talk about one of those stories is a gentleman who's been right in the middle of one of them. Bill Glahn is a researcher with the Center of the American Experiment. And Bill is a gentleman that we hear from time to time from Center of the American Experiment as they do good watchdog work across the state of Minnesota and now in North Dakota as well. He's a policy fellow with the center. Prior to joining the organization, he was a research consultant for the Minnesota House of Representatives and worked as a management consultant for 17 years after working for the Federal Reserve System. So he's a guy kind of after my own heart. We can geek out about economic data and your jobs numbers and all those kinds of things. But today we want to talk about how the state of Minnesota has been running its business. Bill, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to join me here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line.
Thanks for having me.
So the story I read that I have seen now in a couple different places is that you testified to a Minnesota House committee recently that there's been an estimated $611 million in government fraud and waste since 2019. Tell us a little bit about the research project and how you find all this.
Yeah, this is a project I started because I've been following this Feeding Our Future fraud case here in Minnesota. In fact, I just got out of the courtroom. There's a trial going on here in downtown Minneapolis. And I had the idea of trying to track just how much fraud, waste, and abuse has gone on in state government for, say, the last 5 years or so. So we have the Feeding Our Future case that goes back 5 years, and the U.S. Attorney for Minnesota estimates $250 million was stolen in this free food program, which is by far the biggest number. And then I started looking at other cases brought also by the U.S. Attorney, cases brought by the State Attorney General, Keith Ellison, while he's been in office, or cases that are just in civil court. There's a couple of addiction recovery companies being sued in Minnesota or suing Minnesota over alleged overbilling. So I looked at all these cases. I found 27 separate incidents, and this is Medicaid. This is unemployment insurance. It's the food program. It's you name it. And it comes up to $611 million over a five-year period, which, you know, to me, that's real money. You know, the state budget is 70-some billion dollars over 2 years, but $611 million could go buy a lot of road work or, you know, feed hungry children for real this time and a lot of other good things.
Yeah.
And so I put this tracker together. I call it the Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Tracker. Came up to $611 million, and I was invited to present in something brand new committee of the House of Representatives here in Minnesota. It's called the Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Committee. Thought it's a very apt name for what they're trying to accomplish. And they had me in on Monday for a little over an hour and a half, explaining how the tracker worked and giving them my thoughts on the Feeding Our Future trial and lots of other stuff going on.
Yeah, you said it, $611 million. That could, you and I could have a pretty fun weekend with $611 million. That's a lot of money there. So, would you characterize most of the 611 as, I guess we call it waste, fraud, and abuse? Is there one category that seems to stand out more than the others as far as the constitution of that 611?
Yeah, well, most of it's certainly fraud, and most of the dollars and most of the items by count, most of the 27 items are from criminal court cases. So the Feeding Our Future, we had 70 indictments. And between the guilty pleas and court convictions, we're up to 42 convictions. So there's no doubt it was fraud. There's, you know, it's who committed the fraud. Maybe we're still working out. But the $250 million fraud is now a proven fact. And most of these other cases, much, much smaller, $2 million here, $10 million there, adds up to more than half of the total, more than $300 million for sure, is definitely in the fraud category. Some other categories are a little less clear, like the alleged overbilling at these addiction recovery companies. Is it fraud? Nobody's been charged with any criminal wrongdoing, but there have been lawsuits, allegations of overbilling. So I put that in the waste and or abuse category, where money went out the door. It's fairly clear that money shouldn't have gone out the door, at least not in those amounts, that overbilling occurred. But does it meet the statutory criminal definition of fraud? Could you convict somebody beyond a reasonable doubt? I'm not sure, but it's certainly money that should have never been spent. It should be money still in the state treasury.
So what was the reaction to the presentation of your findings?
Well, it varied sharply by political party. So this is unusual. We have a state House of Representatives that is exactly evenly split, 67 Republicans, 67 Democrats. But in the power-sharing deal they did to get the thing up and running, and it took 3 weeks to get it up and running this winter, they made a deal to create this committee, and it's the only committee with a majority Republican body. So there are 5 Republicans, 3 Democrats. One guy was absent. He couldn't make the hearing. But the 4 Republicans, they weren't happy to see the numbers because that's 611 million that's not around for them to appropriate, but they were appreciative of the information. And I gave them a full page of recommendations for how to prevent future frauds, and that was well received. Democrats really didn't want to hear any of this. There was a real shoot the messenger vibe. And, I got into it with a couple of them over specific numbers. Was I exaggerating this category? You know, was I overplaying this? And, you know, at the end of the day, I got to believe my number is not capturing anywhere near the total amount of waste, fraud, and abuse. Have we caught half of it? Have we caught a tenth of it? I don't know. Mm. But the Democrats were actually trying to argue that I was exaggerating the problem, and I was making up numbers to just make the whole state look bad by saying there's more fraud and abuse than really exists.
Yeah.
And I got to say, having spent a lot of time putting that spreadsheet together, I wasn't having it.
Well, wait till the paid family leave policy goes into effect. You'll be able to find all kinds of stuff in every nook and cranny of that program. The thing is a behemoth, as you know. And the governor, I think, has already said they're going to add 400 new jobs to the state payroll to administer that.
A whole new state department.
Oh, yeah, of course. And of course, if they say 400, it's going to be 800 at some point down the line.
Yeah, so I worked as a deputy commissioner in our State Department of Commerce, and we covered banking, we covered insurance, we did the weights and measures for the state, we did the energy industry. We didn't have 400 employees, so that's how big this operation is. 400 employees to just give out checks to people to pay them for, you know, child leave or caring for an elderly parent or whatever the cause is, and rather than hire an insurance company that does that all the time, we're creating a whole new bureaucracy. And again, as I mentioned, almost all of state government is on the honor system. So when somebody applies for 12 weeks of paid leave, you know, maybe they have a doctor's note, but we're supposed to just assume, you know, this is all done in good faith. And then, I got to figure a few years from now, I'll be adding more items to the fraud tracker.
I imagine that you will. I haven't gotten into much on my show, the Feeding Our Future scandal, because it gets a little deep in the weeds for us in Fargo-Moorhead. But it is certainly something of note. If you could boil this down, give me the Cliff Notes version and talk to me like we're 10 years old up here about what happened with Feeding Our Future and why that turned into such a scandal.
Right. Well, the federal child nutrition program is in all 50 states. You have it in North Dakota. It's to provide subsidies for daycares, adult after-school programs, to feed kids breakfast and lunches. And it only reimburses $1, $2, $3 per meal. And so the idea is if you're a daycare and you're serving low-income kids, it helps subsidize the lunch you provide at the daycare during the day. And, you know, I think everybody agrees it's a good program, but a bunch of fraudsters and dozens of them here in Minnesota got the idea that they could collect that money without actually serving the meals. So they served allegedly tens of millions of meals, which, you know, just to do round numbers, they claimed they served 100 million meals, maybe they served 10 million meals, but billed for 100. And so now there's a trial going on in Minneapolis for some of the defendants. A bunch of them were convicted last year in a trial. We've had 37 guilty pleas. It turns out some of these kids never existed. They were billing for meals that weren't served.
Yeah.
And it was fraud on an industrial scale. The U.S. attorney, the outgoing Andy Luger, whose term ended, but the guy who brought these charges, he said, "This program's been everywhere in America, all 50 states. There's been no problem like this in any other state. Nothing of this scale." Mm. So he calls it the number one COVID-related fraud scandal in the whole country.
Wow.
$250 million, dozens of defendants, and this whole thing is dragged on now for 3 years trying to process all these defendants. It's going to go at least another full year. And I just asked the lead prosecutor of the current case, will there be more indictments? And he said that's his expectation.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's a story that I know got a lot of traction down the Twin Cities area, and a lot of people were trying to sort of figure out, okay, where does the blame lie on this one? Obviously, the governor is the head of the state, but sometimes in politics we blame things on people, and it's not really fair to say that they had something to do with it. Do you think, from what you've seen, is the governor, is he culpable here in this one?
Well, the governor, he's where the buck stops. The governor appoints the commissioner of education and the assistant commissioner and all these people who at the Department of Education, for whatever reason, that's the state agency picked to oversee this program. It's a USDA program at the federal level. But the State Department of Education oversaw this. It's frustrating to me because there's more than enough blame to go around. Yes, blame the crooks who have admitted guilt or been convicted by a jury of their peers. But the State Department of Education, it frustrates me, when you look back, they knew there was fraud going on. Yeah. They knew who was committing the fraud, and they just let it go for 2 years until the FBI got enough evidence. They did these raids and then put a stop to it. But it really seems to me, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, you could have stopped this a lot earlier and many hundreds of millions of dollars sooner. Hindsight being 2020, but we don't want this to happen again, and it's not clear anything has changed in state government to prevent the next feeding our future.
Yeah, well, really well said, and that you're right. At some point, if you are the leader, your job is to ask questions when things don't seem right. And if you're getting all these tea leaves and wind of a situation where there's not clarity, for one, or where it seems like things are being outright created or fraudulently created, then there's a duty, no question about that. Bill, it's been a great visit. Thank you very much for taking the time. Thank you for you and the work that the Center for the American Experiment does. We need you to be doing what you're doing down there and trying to draw attention to whatever you can. The fact that some of your stuff is being picked up in some of the traditional media outlets means that there are a lot of people that are getting that information because of your good work. So well done, sir, and thank you for taking a few minutes today.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. Take care. Thanks so much for your time today, Bill. That's Bill Glahn from the Center of the American Experiment. He's a policy fellow with the center. When we come back, I've got one more note to pass along that I saw out of the Minnesota legislature. Minnesota Democrats reintroducing a reparations bill for $100 million worth of quote-unquote damages to be paid to people in the state of Minnesota, but just certain people. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show. All right, a couple minutes left here, but time to squeeze in a call. Always time to squeeze in a call when we get to the end of the show. Jay from Fargo is on the line, joining us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Jay. What's going on tonight?
Hey, Steve. Hope you're having a good one. So when we talk about asking questions, I think something that we can throw towards our Senator Hoeven and so forth. So when we have someone like a billionaire like George Soros, who owns hundreds of stations, radio stations in the United States, other forms of media, things like this, why would it not be illegal for someone like that, that also owns a tremendous amount of stock inside of many companies? They can go on, whenever we get reports of here's the inflation, here's the jobs report, here's where, all of the different items that come up, and they can make those newscasters then have a very negative tone on the economy. Well, maybe they've shorted stock then, and it causes them to make money on that standpoint. And then, of course, they can start talking very bright about the economy and so forth. And then they're buying everything at a low point to then sell again later. How is that when we've got billionaires, as I've mentioned, that they own this many different forms of media? I mean, that's something that probably should be peeked at. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, it's a great question. It really is. And I don't know enough about the inner workings of how the Federal Communications Commission looks into applications. So we've recently just finished our purchase of WDAY radio at our company, and we had to go through you know, all kinds of paperwork and all kinds of analysis on who we are and what we're all about. Now, if Joe Biden's in office and there's a Democrat that doesn't like a conservative radio station getting stronger, they could shoot that down. Certainly, there's that kind of underlying kind of question you have. But then what you said as well. How do we know they're not going to rig the game on their reporting to try to make more things happen? I guess you don't really know, although George Soros, for these radio stations he's buying, has to go through the same process and show that he'd be a good owner of these stations. Now, in the real world, there's a lot of other media voices out there, and it's tough to say I could buy enough stations to really change the market narrative as a whole. But a guy like Soros has got the kind of money where it's definitely worth talking about. Jay, it's a really great question. I'm not sure I got a perfect answer for you. I love those, though, because now we get to kind of sort it out and think it through in the days ahead. Thank you, my friend. Have a great rest of the day and great evening. Friends, that's going to do it for us here on the program tonight. Mark Levin coming up next on the Flag, 6:30. I've got high school basketball on WDAY Davies in West Fargo. Have a great night, a great weekend, and keep on flying that flag.